Okay, from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 8, Texts 18 and 19. Chapter is called the Narayana Kavacha Shield. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Bandhare Bhagavan Pat Vyapathyat Vandvat Bhayad Rishabha Nirchitatma Yakyascha Lokat Avatach Chanantat Valokanat Krota Vashat Ahinda. Translation: may the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His incarnation as Dhanvantari relieve me from undesirable eatables and protect me from physical illness. My Lord Rishabdev, who conquered his inner and outer senses, protect me from fear produced by the duality of heat and cold. May Yajna protect me from defamation and harm from the populace. And may Lord Balaram and Shesha protect me from envious serpents. To live within this material world, one must face many dangers, as described herein. For example, undesirable food poses a danger to health, and therefore one must give up such food. The Dhanvantri incarnation can protect us in this regard. Since Lord Vishnu is a supersoul of all living entities, if he likes, he can save us from adipotika disturbances from other living entities. Lord Balaram is a shesha incarnation, and therefore he can save us from angry serpents or envious persons who are always ready to attack. Verse 19.
Vaipayano Bhagavana
Prabodha. Vaipayano Bhagavana Prabodha.
Buddhastu Pashanda Gana Pramada.
Buddhastu Pashanda Gana Pramada.
Kalki Kale Kala Malat Prabhatu.
Kalki Kale Kala Malat Prabhatu.
Dharma Vanayor Ukrita Vatara.
Dharma Vanayor Ukrita Vatara.
Vaipayana.
Vaipayana.
Srila Vyasadeva.
Srila Vyasadeva.
Giver of all Vedic knowledge.
Bhagavan.
The most powerful incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
The most powerful incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Aprabodhat. From ignorance of the Shastra.
From ignorance of the Shastra.
Buddhatu.
Buddhatu.
Also Lord Buddha.
Also Lord Buddha.
Ashandagana.
Ashandagana.
Of atheists creating disillusionment.
Of atheists creating disillusionment.
For innocent persons.
For innocent persons.
Pramada.
Pramada.
From the madness.
From the madness.
Kalki.
Kalki.
Lord Kalki.
Lord Kalki.
The incarnation of Keshava.
The incarnation of Keshava.
Kale.
Kale.
Of this Kali Yuga.
Of this Kali Yuga.
Kala Malat.
Kala Malat.
From the darkness of the age.
From the darkness of the age.
Prabhatu.
Prabhatu.
May he protect.
May he protect.
Dharma Avanaya.
Dharma Avanaya.
For the protection of religious principles.
For the protection of religious principles.
Guru.
Guru.
Very great.
Very great.
Krita Avatara.
Krita Avatara.
Who took an incarnation.
Who took an incarnation.
Translation for Prabhupada Prabhupada. May the Personality of Godhead in His incarnation as Vyasadeva protect me from all kinds of ignorance resulting from the absence of Vedic knowledge. May Lord Buddhadeva protect me from activities opposed to Vedic principles and from laziness that causes one to madly forget the Vedic principles of knowledge and ritualistic action. May Kalki Dev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appeared as an incarnation to protect religious principles, protect me from the dirt of the age of Kali. This verse mentions various incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appear for various purposes. Srila Vyasadeva Mahamuni compiled the Vedic literature for the benefit of all human society. If one wants to be protected from the reactions of ignorance, even in this age of Kali, one may consult the books left by Srila Vyasadeva, namely the four Vedas, Sama, Yajurvik, and Atharva, the 108 Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, Brahma Sutra, Mahabharata, Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapurana, Vyasadeva's commentary on the Brahma Sutra, and the other 17 Puranas. Only by the mercy of Srila Vyasadeva do we have so many volumes of transcendental knowledge to save us from the clutches of ignorance. As described by Srila Jayadeva Goswami in his Dashavatara Stotra, Buddha apparently decried the Vedic knowledge.
Nindasiyakyavadhyar-ahaha-shruti-jatam satayahidaya-darshita-pashukhatam kesavadhita-buddha-shirira-chai-jagadi-shahare.
The mission of Lord Buddha was to save people from the abominable activity of animal killing and to save the poor animals from being unnecessarily killed. When Bhashambis were cheating by killing animals on the plea of sacrificing them in Vedic yajnas, the Lord said, if the Vedic injunctions allow animal killing, I do not accept the Vedic principles. Thus he actually saved people who acted according to Vedic principles. One should therefore surrender to Lord Buddha so that he can help one avoid misusing the injunctions of the Vedas. The Kalki Avatar is a fierce incarnation who vanquishes the class of atheists born in this age of Kali. Now, in the beginning of Kali Yuga, many irreligious principles are in effect. And as Kali Yuga advances, many pseudo-religious principles will certainly be introduced, and people will forget the real religious principles enunciated by Lord Krishna before the beginning of Kali Yuga, namely, principles of surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord. Unfortunately, because of Kali Yuga, foolish people do not surrender to the lotus feet of Krishna. Even most people who claim to belong to the Vedic system of religion are actually opposed to the Vedic principles. Every day they manufacture a new type of dharma, on the plea that whatever one manufactures is also a path of liberation. Atheistic men generally say, Jota mot, tota pot. According to this view, there are hundreds and thousands of different opinions in human society, and each opinion is a valid religious principle. This philosophy of rascals has killed the religious principles mentioned in the Vedas, and such philosophies will become increasingly influential as Kali Yuga progresses. In this last stage of Kali Yuga, Kalkidev, the fierce incarnation of Keshava, will descend to kill all the atheists and will save only the devotees of the Lord. Let's read the two translations again. May the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his incarnation as Dhanvantari relieve me from undesirable eatables and protect me from physical illness. May Lord Rishabdev, who conquered his inner and outer senses, protect me from fear produced by the duality of heat and cold. May Yetra protect me from defamation and harm from the populace. And may Lord Balaram Ashesha protect me from envious servants. May the personality of Godhead in his incarnation as Vyasadev protect me from all kinds of ignorance resulting from the absence of Vedic knowledge. May Lord Buddhadev protect me from activities opposed to Vedic principles and from laziness that causes one to madly forget the Vedic principles of knowledge and ritualistic action. May Kalkidev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appeared as an incarnation to protect religious principles, protect me from the dirt of the age of Kali. These two verses are offering a very nice opportunity to remember the Lord in his various incarnations. Dhanvantari, Rishabdev, Yakya, Balaram, Vyasadev, Buddha, and Kalki. So that's seven of the incarnations. Seven incarnations are very briefly described here. So it's a very nice opportunity to discuss these incarnations in this very holy place of Bangladesh and this very nice assembly of devotees. So I was planning to just go through the seven incarnations one by one, briefly, and discuss a little bit about each of them. The first one mentioned is Dhanvantari. The first section on Bhagavatam is describing the Narayan Kavacha shield and the prayer to be offered to Lord Narayan for protection. And various forms of the Lord are invoked to protect one from various mishaps. So Dhanvantari, he is being invoked to protect one from illness. So as we know, the incarnation of Dhanvantari appeared when the demigods and the demons were churning the ocean to produce the so-called nectar of immortality, the amrit, drinking which they would be greatly benefited. the demigods and demons are traditionally enemies, but for this purpose they came together and joined forces to produce the nectar. Of course, I'm not sure why it's called the nectar of immortality. It's a bit of a misnomer because there is no such thing as immortality in this material world. But it must obviously give some very good facility, physical strength and vigor and long life. So the demigods and the demons were both very interested in producing this nectar and drinking it. And it's a very long pastime, but after various substances were produced from the ocean, finally the culmination of that was when this incarnation of Dhanvantari appeared from the ocean and was carrying with him the pot of nectar. And up to that point, the demigods and demons had been cooperating, but as soon as the nectar was in front of them, the demons immediately snatched it away and started fighting with each other even for who was going to get the chance to drink it first. So Dhanvantari is the founder of the science of Ayurveda. Just like the, by drinking the nectar, one will get great strength and health. So Dhanvantari, he's the one who produced the nectar, who delivered the nectar, and he's also the father of the science of Ayurveda. So he's naturally being prayed to for health. And here it particularly mentioned that undesirable food, undesirable eatables. So Ayurveda, Ayurvedic system of medicine is primarily, it understands that primarily disease is caused by indigestion or by digestive problems, by not eating properly. So that's why this is mentioned here twice in the purport and in the translation, that if one eats healthily, then most diseases can be avoided. This is also corroborated in Bhagavad Gita, where Prabhupada talks about the fire of digestion in the stomach of everybody. And this is quite a common phrase, fire of digestion. And if one wants to have good digestion, it's also recommended that one can chant that verse after eating. Aham vashvana vabhutva praninam dehamashita pranapana samayukta pacham yandam chaturvidham. And rub your tummy a few times, chant that verse, and that should aid in digestion. So that verse is talking about how the Lord is the fire of digestion within the stomach, the Vaishvandra Agni. And he cooks, literally it says, Pachanyanam, Pachami means to cook. Literally I digest the food, within the four kinds of food within the stomach. So even for such a intrinsic function of the body, such as digestion, the devotee of the Lord is recognizing that Krishna actually is that fire, and he's the one who aids us in digestion. Therefore, certain eatables are recommended, those which are more easily digestible. Certain foods are not recommended. Certain times are better for eating, especially when the sun is high and the energy is high. It's recommended one should eat one's meals. At night time, it's better to eat lightly or not at all. Like last night, we were lured by the very tasty French fries in the restaurant. And they ate too many. I kept on going back and ordering more for our group, and the waiters were having a hard time keeping track of our orders. And this morning, I feel the effect of that. So therefore, actually, it's recommended not to eat anything major in the night. Of course, this is unknown to most people, because for most people, dinner is the major meal of the day when the family comes together, sits together, socialize, have the full meal, and then go to sleep soon afterwards. But actually, by keeping the stomach empty at night, that gives the body also a chance to relax better. Otherwise, the body is simply digesting all night, so there's no rest for that fire of digestion. In any case, the Lord is the controller of that fire, and we are dependent on Him to digest our food and therefore have a healthy body. So this is a little bit about Lord Dhanvantari. Lord Rishabhdev, we know from the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, he was a great king and he instructed his 100 sons headed by Bharat in principles of Krishna consciousness and governance. And after his renunciation of the throne, he became an avadut, mendicant. And he was simply wandering the earth in probably transcendental consciousness, neglectful of his body and neglectful of the elements such as heat and cold. So here the verse is praying to him, may he protect me, Lord Vishudev, protect me from the fear produced by the duality of heat and cold. So Lord Vishudev was totally transcendental to his body, conquered his inner and outer senses. Therefore, if we wish to control our senses and also be free from the dualities of life, we are recommended to worship Lord Vishudev, who demonstrated these qualities. The third incarnation mentioned here is Yajna, who has been prayed to for protection from defamation and harm from the populace. Now, Yajna personality is not so much information given in the Shastra. I was able to look up this morning in the fourth canto, the very beginning of the fourth canto, first chapter, the first few verses are describing this personality of Yajna, incarnation of Yajna. So he was the grandson of Swayambhu Manu. Swayambhu Manu's daughter Akuti was married to the sage Nandaruchi. And there was a condition given, Swayambhu Manu gave a condition that I'll let you marry my daughter, but I want the son born from you and her to come back to me, to be as if my son. I want my grandson to come and live with me. So that was a condition. Sometimes this was done because the father, the king, didn't have a son, he only had a daughter, and he wanted the son to continue the line. But in this case, it's quite interesting because Swayambhu Manu had sons. He had two sons, Priyavrata and Dhanuka, right? So he had sons, but he still wanted his grandson to come back as if it would be his son. So he made this condition, and the sage Ruchi agreed and married Akuti. And they actually had twins, a boy and a girl. And Yajna was the name of the boy, and very interestingly, Dakshina was the name of the girl. So when the children were born, Swayambhu Manu took back Yajna, as was agreed upon, because he knew that this Yajna is incarnation of the Lord, and so he wanted to have him as his own, have his association. But he was very happy that there were two children born, so therefore, his daughter Akuti and Ruchi would have a child to raise, and she was Dakshina. So, side point, but Yajna and Dakshina also means the donation given to the priest after the performance of a sacrifice or a ceremony. So, Yajna and Dakshina go hand in hand. If there's no Dakshina, then the Yajna is incomplete. And actually, it's described in the Shastras that if the sponsor of the yajna, or the person for whom the ceremony is being performed, the yajaman, if he doesn't give the dakshina to the priest, then he gets no benefit from that sacrifice. Even if it was meant for his benefit, he doesn't get the benefit. And so the yajna and dakshina have to go hand in hand. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Vithihinam shishtanam if mantrahinam adakshinam. Adakshinam, if this is a sacrifice in the mode of ignorance, if the sacrifice is not completed with dakshina, then it's considered to be tamasic, mode of ignorance, yajna. In any case, yajna and dakshina were the twins, grandchildren of Swayambhu Manu. And interestingly, they actually married each other later on. So yajna married his twin sister, which is, even today, by Kaliyuga standards, that would not be acceptable. And what to speak of in Satya Yuga. So, Yajna being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Dakshina was incarnation of Lakshmi Devi. So naturally, the Lord and Lakshmi must be together. So they did unite in that way. But I can see how, it's a very unusual, externally very unusual union. And therefore, Yajna has been prayed to be for protection from defamation and harm. Because you can imagine that this would not ordinarily be something that people would object to and criticize. But of course, the Lord and Lakshmi are inseparable. So we can pray to Yajna for protection from defamation. You can say even Lord Ram, he felt he was being defamed by the Vashaman in Ayodhya after Sita returned. And therefore he was very considerate of the criticism he was getting. So Yajna also could be seen to externally have been doing something by marrying his twin sister, doing something very unusual. But the Lord is above such considerations, and because she was Lakshmi, naturally they had to be united. So we can pray to him for freedom from defamation and harm from the populace. A very interesting little side story. Lord Balaram has been prayed to for protection from serpents. I don't know if you have snakes around this area.
They're here.
Okay, so you're lucky in that respect, but many places of the world they have problems with snakes, even in Mayapur area, there are a lot of snakes. So Lord Balaram has been prayed to because his incarnation is another Shesha, who's the ultimate snake of the universe. So he's been prayed to for protection from envious serpents, or even from envious people who are considered even more vicious than angry snakes. Generally, snakes will not attack unless they're disturbed. If you step on a snake or you threaten their, if they feel threatened by you, especially if they have children, eggs or young with them, then the snakes are prone to attack. But the Shastra says that humans are actually can be even more envious than snakes. And whereas snakes can be controlled by mantra, there's the image of India as a land of snake charmers, at least it used to be. And sometimes we used to see in Mayapur the men would come into little baskets of, you know, with their snakes inside and make them come out and one of us would watch. But they have control over the snake. But the envious human, he can't be controlled in such a gentle way as mantra. He has to be given punishment or restrictions. So the Balaram and Ananda Shesha can be prayed to from protection from snakes. Not only Lord Balaram, but there are other descriptions in the Shastra of whom one should pray to, or how to be protected from the attack of snakes. In the story of Kaliya, the Phala Shruti, at the end of the chapter, many chapters of Bhagavatam and Shastra, at the end of the chapter they give some Phala Shruti, which is the benefit of hearing this story. So there are various benefits from hearing various stories. So in the Kaliya pastime, one of the benefits is that one will be protected from the attack of snakes by remembering Krishna's defeating of Kaliya. Also in Chaitanya Lila, we know when Nimai was very small, there was an incident where he was wandering around in the courtyard and a snake came there. And unlike most children who are naturally scared of snakes, he merely grabbed the snake, and the snake coiled around, and he sat down, and he was enjoying a rest, resting on the coils of the snake. Of course, the snake was actually an Anandashesh who had come to serve Chaitanya. But nobody knew that, and all the household, the family members were naturally very alarmed and very fearful that, my God, the child is playing with the snake, a poisonous snake, any moment he might be bitten and die. So there was a big uproar, and they were trying to, you know, figure out what to do. You really can't do anything, they were just simply praying. And particularly they're praying to Garuda, because Garuda is the great enemy of the snakes, and they're praying to Garuda, please help us scare away the snake from our mind so he's not harmed by it. Even in Ramlila, when Ram and Lakshman were bound by the snake rope, and no one knew how to release them, and Garuda appeared there, and those snake arrows, there were snakes in the form of ropes that were bound them tightly. Just by seeing Garuda, they immediately fled, and Ram and Lakshman were in that way released. So, generally also, when they started praying to Garuda, then Nimai understood. Ananda Shesha understood that everyone is very worried, so actually I'm disturbing the devotees, so I should leave. And as he was crawling and slithering away, Nimai was trying to catch him again and again. And he liked the snake, he wanted to play with it. And immediately the relatives grabbed him and started chanting so many mantras for his protection and praying that this mustn't have been an ordinary snake. Somehow Nimai was saved. And Nimai was still trying to fought for the snake. So, for protection from snakes, we have in this verse the Balaram, also the Kaliya pastime can be remembered, and also Garuda can be prayed to for protection from snakes. So, that covers text 18. Text 19 talks about first Srila Vyasadeva, and in the Prabhupada, he lists various shastras that Srila Vyasadeva compiled for the benefit of all human society. And there's a famous verse in the first canto, Krishna Swadham Bhakate Dharma Jnana Vidhi Saha Kalo Nashta Vishamesha Purana Vipodhana Vida, that when Krishna left the planet in the beginning of Kali Yuga, Kali Yuga actually started when Krishna went back to Guru Vrindavan. And therefore, Krishna was a shelter of Dharma, a shelter of all religious principles. And when he went, religious principles, Jnana, Dharma, they both went with him. But the Srimad Bhagavatam, as compiled by Srila Vyasadeva, is the shelter for the souls of Kali Yuga to get the transcendental, touch of the Lord that is given through Srimad Bhagavatam. And the verse describes that those persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of Kali Yuga, this verse also talks about the Kala Malat. Mala literally means dirt, it means stool. From the dirt, from the contamination, from the darkness of Kali Yuga, the light, Purana Arko, Mandita, Arka is sun. So the light shines, the light of the Bhagavatam shines on the Kali Yuga and gives vision to the conditioned souls. It gives protection from the contamination of Kali Yuga. And Prabhupada says, only by the mercy of Srila Vyasadeva we have so many volumes, transcendental knowledge, to save us from the clutches of ignorance. So, it's not like Srila Vyasadeva was, it was his job to compile the shastras, he was being paid by the hour, and therefore he spent so much time, to write all these books. He simply did it out of compassion for the fallen conditioned souls of Kali Yuga. This is the nature of Vyasadeva, of course, is an empowered incarnation, nature of the Lord, the nature of the devotees of the Lord, to always try to see how they can benefit the conditioned souls. So out of his unlimited mercy, Srila Vyasadeva took the great endeavor of compiling all the shastras for the benefit of Kali Yuga residents of us. Then the next incarnation is described as Lord Buddha. And Buddhism even today is a very popular religion around the world. And from Shastra we understand that Buddha is actually an incarnation of the Lord, which the followers of Lord Buddha will not likely accept. Of course, the followers of Lord Buddha mostly are not even following the principles of Lord Buddha, because his primary instruction was his most famous instruction, primary instruction was ahimsa, non-violence. Unfortunately, somehow today, because of the influence of Kali Yuga and the principle of cheaters on the cheaters, many Buddhists are not even vegetarian, which seems to simply mock Lord Buddha's teachings. In this purport here, Prabhupada says that Buddha's primary task was to stop the slaughter of animals in the sacrifices. In the name of doing the sacrifices, many Pashandis, Pashandi literally means atheist. They apparently are following the Vedic principles, but their purpose was simply to slaughter animals and enjoy flesh eating. So the Buddha's mission was to save the people from this sin and save the animals from being killed. And he did that by rejecting the Vedas. Here Prabhupada says that the Vedic injunctions allow animal killing. And Buddha says he does not accept the Vedic principles. So animal killing was, in a very restricted way, allowed in the Shastras. the Gomeda and Ashwamedha sacrifices were performed sometimes. But most importantly, the sacrificial animals, the cow, the horse, which were sacrificed, they were not simply slaughtered and left to rot the rotting carcass on the ground. They were actually rejuvenated. They were given a new life. They were killed, and then the idea was successful. The animal would regain life, even younger and stronger. So this was actually the proper performance of sacrifice, animal sacrifice in the Vedas. In Kali Yuga, people do not have such shakti, and they're not able to perform these sacrifices properly. So it had degenerated, it was simply slaughtering of animals. And actually, even in the Shastra, this is forbidden in Kali Yuga. Ashwamedha Gala Lambam, the verses said, different things are prohibited in Kali Yuga, and the first two are the horse sacrifice and the cow sacrifice. Ashwamedha Lambam. So even in the Shastra, it's prohibited in Kali Yuga, but people were not following that principle, so therefore they put the pen and wholesalely rejected the Vedas, simply to protect the animals and to stop the sinful people killing the animals. And that was also out of his compassion. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada describes how if someone really wants to eat flesh, then there is a prescribed way to do it. On the dark moon night, one is supposed to sacrifice a goat to Goddess Kali. And there's a one-to-one chance in the year of the goat before killing it. Mamsa kadati kadati iti mamsa. It's actually the definition of meat. In Sanskrit, mamsa is meat. And mamsa literally means he to me. Mamsa kadati iti mamsa. Mamsa kadati, I eat him, that is the definition of meat, or he eats me. Because the understanding is that you're sacrificing the animal, and in future life, the animal will be reborn. You'll also be reborn, and he'll sacrifice you. So if someone has a good intelligence, which this mantra is trying to knock that intelligence into the, you know, the animal killer's head, they'll realize that, what am I chanting? That I'm killing this animal now, and he's going to kill me in the future. And that's the very definition of meat. So therefore, it's not a very intelligent thing to do. I should stop this. Otherwise, I'm going to have to suffer the same fate as this goat. So the whole Vedic system was to reduce and restrict these sinful activities. So it was only once a month, the dark moon, chanting this mantra, a goat particularly, not definitely never a cow. And that situation was allowed to have some flesh. But the understanding was that you should realize that if any intelligence, you realize this is not a good practice, you would have to suffer in the future, and therefore you should give it up. And not that, and Prabhupada talks about in the Calcutta, the butcher's houses, you know, butcher shops, and they were having a DVD of Kali, or a picture of Kali, and you know, that was like a compromise, yeah, Kali is here, she will make it prasad, it's fine. And that's not the Shastric way. Shastric way was once a month on the dark moon night. So therefore, the Lord Buddha came to stop all these sinful activities, and therefore he's prayed to for protection, to misuse the Vedas, from misusing the Vedas. May he protect me from activities opposed to Vedic principles and from laziness that causes one to madly forget the Vedic principles of knowledge and ritualistic action. And then Kalki is the final incarnation he's prayed to for protection from the dirt at the age of Kali, as I mentioned before. Kali, Kale Kaalam Dat, the contamination of the time of Kali Yuga. The Prabhupada talks about how in Kali Yuga the religious principles are obscured and many pseudo-religious principles have been introduced. So we know Kali Yuga is relatively very young. You know, we're 432,000 years total Kali Yuga, and only 5,000 plus years have been passed. And already there's so much confusion, so many deviant philosophies, even some that claim to be Vedic, but they're all simply misleading people. And the famous slogan of these kinds of people is Jotamo Totapo. In Bengali, that's how it's pronounced. And it literally means as many opinions, that many paths. But is path or way. As many opinions, that many paths. Basically, it's the rough translation in, you know, in English would be, it feels good, do it. And this is a mantra of the modern age. If it feels good, do it. Whatever you want, it's fine. And this is such a damaging and nonsensical philosophy. It really makes no sense, because in practical life, it doesn't work like that. We caught the train from Brussels, and you know, I was pretty sure it was the right train, which happened when I saw the station mentioned on the screen. And then we went to Brussels North. It was the first station. Well, maybe it was Brussels Central and Brussels North. And I thought, well, Radish is actually southeast of Brussels, so why are we going north? There was some doubt. Because if you get on the wrong train, you're going to go somewhere else. You know? If you worship a demigod, as Krishna says very clearly in Bhagavad Gita, Yanti Deva Bhutadivan, if you worship demigods, you go to demigods. Pitri Yanti Trivata, if you worship the Pitris, you go to Pitriloka. Bhutan Yanti Bhutija, you worship the ghosts and spirits, you go to their place. And if you worship Krishna, you'll go to him. So Shastra very clearly makes distinction. You worship this person, and so many descriptions are there, similar. You worship Krishna, you go to Krishna, you worship someone else, you'll go there. So this Yatamantapa has actually no logical basis and no Shastri basis. Practically, if you get on the train going to Amsterdam, you want to come, you know, to Paris. And this has no sense. It just makes no sense. But it's so prevalent that, it's okay, everything is good. You can do whatever you want, you still get, spiritual, you still make spiritual progress. Prabhupada is very much against this slogan and this philosophy. It's not even a philosophy, it's just hedonism, basically. Whatever you want, whatever you do, it's fine. And sometimes that's also, it's covered by the phrase of Karma Yoga. In India, people, they're just doing the regular work, looking after their families or anything. They say, I'm a Karma Yogi. I'm doing my work. I'm doing my responsibilities, maintaining my family by X, Y, Z means. That's Karma Yoga. But that's not Karma Yoga. We read what Bhagavad Gita, what Karma Yoga is. It's all this watered-down, speculative, Mayavad kind of mentality which is producing these kinds of strange philosophies. You know, totally opposed to the Shastra. Therefore, Kalki Dev is supposed to be worshipped to be protected from such deviant philosophies. Of course, even more potent in Kali Yuga is the holy name of the Lord. And it's interesting to note that the same phrase here, the Kaliya Kala Manat, we have the verse from that's described in Mahamantra, Kali Kalmasha Nashana. The Kali Kalmasha Nashana, the Kalmasha means pollution. Nashana is the destroyer of the pollution of Kali Yuga. Kali Kalmasha Nashana. Iti Shodashakam Namnam Kali Kalmasha Nashana Nato Padataropaya Sarva Vedeshu Vishyate. Then the next, the sister verse, the next one is the Mahamantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So it's describing Mahamantra in the Upanishads that these 16 words, Iti Shodashaka, Shodasha means 16, Kali Kalma, Masha Nashana, they destroy the pollution of Kali Yuga. Nato Parataropaya, there's no other way, it's like the Harinam verse.
Harinam, Eva Kevala.
Katiranyata. There's no other way. Kali Kalmasha Nashana, Nato Parataropaya, Sarva Vedesha Vishijan. This is described in all the Shastras. So, we worship these great personalities, such as Tanvantari, Rishabhdev, Yajna, Balaram, Vyasadev, Buddha, Kalki. And we also take shelter of the holy name in Kali Yuga, especially, because that is the most potent method of protecting oneself from these bad influences of Kali Yuga. So, since it's almost pretty much time, I should stop here. Unless anyone has any question or comment.
You spoke about a little bit about disappearance of Krishna from the material world. So sometimes I'm giving two in French, as my service, and some people ask me how Krishna disappeared. Because I explain Krishna as a form, as a person, friends, and relatives. And they ask, how it disappeared. And then I'm a little bit lost, because to explain how it disappeared, it's difficult for others to understand. Can you explain, how do you explain to new Kamalas?
I think you just have to keep it simple, because unless you have time to really get into the whole, you have to explain who is Krishna and his transcendental form, never is affected by anything. We know the stories in 12th canto how Krishna took advantage of the hunter's arrow and even left a material body to confuse people. But the Lord, he has a transcendental body. He's never affected by old age or disease or death like us. And he simply returned to the spiritual world in his full manifest form. And the demigods were even watching him return and praying to him. Depending on the people and how much you can explain personality of Krishna to him, it's a good opportunity. But I think probably just to keep it simple like that, because it's a confusing story even for people who think they know about Krishna. That he was injured and he died, and this is one of Krishna's mysterious pastimes that we have to hear from the acharyas, the proper explanation.
I just have a dilemma.
Sorry?
I have a dilemma, because I don't know, are Vaishnavas supposed to be non-violent? Because now we have many flies here in Bangladesh, and then there are fly traps everywhere. And I work in the restaurant, and every time I hear this, it means, oh no, another fly died. So I feel am I going to get that karma from that? Am I also have to suffer from that, because I'm a part of this project, which means I'm a part of the killing of so many flies, like slaughterhouse flies.
It's a lot of managerial question which should be answered.
But maybe it's more philosophically, am I going to face some reactions?
It's not ideal, but I would assume that there have been other methods tried and failed, and therefore there's no other option to reduce the fly problem. But I don't really want to comment, because I don't know the situation here, the history of the understanding behind it.